listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3.
Final hour, Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app and now up on TSN 2. Brian Hayes, Bruce Arthur from The Star, Dave Poulin in here. I think Leo Routens is kicking around. We might have Leo join us later in the hour around the table. We just heard a bit of, a soundbite from Seinfeld, and today marks the 30th anniversary of Seinfeld, the debut of Seinfeld. And I believe it was called the Seinfeld Chronicles when it originally debuted.
Brilliant.
The Seinfeld Chronicles.
Brilliant.
Seinfeld is one of those shows that you have to remember that they didn't have cell phones. Approximately half to three quarters of the plots of Seinfeld and of most major motion pictures before cell phones.
Yeah.
Would have been completely ruined by cell phones.
It's so true. Yeah, the pop-ins, it's all about a pop-in. It's not like that, the whole, that phrase was created from Seinfeld, the pop-in. But you don't pop in. No one pops in.
A text first.
You send a text.
Kramer still pops in.
Yeah, he probably does, actually.
Yeah. Kramer pops in.
There was a certain generation where maybe you still get a pop-in. I can't remember the last time I had a pop-in. No one pops in.
See, the best part is how when you keep saying it, it sounds like Seinfeld.
I love it. It's the greatest thing ever. The pop-in.
We should pop in the newsroom after this.
There you go. Although we're allowed to do that.
Yeah.
Because we're in a work environment. But, you know, society has changed so much, you're right, because of the cell phone. Where now it's like rude if you just show up.
Could I stop by? Can I stop by?
It's rude.
You around? Can I stop by?
Like, when we all grew up as kids, you'd just bike over to your buddy's house and see if they were home.
My kids still do that.
Do they?
My kids still go to other people's houses and knock on the doors.
And just check it out. And do you get blamed? Like, do their parents blame you? Like, why didn't you send me a text to give me a heads up that your kid's coming home?
Why don't you buy your child a cell phone?
This is only if they're within walking or biking distance.
Right.
But, like, it's part of what I think a neighborhood should be. That's the kind of neighborhood I grew up in.
Totally.
And I also want my kids to have kind of responsibility to learn how to do things without a cell phone before they get cell phones.
I totally agree with that.
No.
Parenting 101. I like it. So we talked a lot about Kawhi Leonard, Mitch Marner. We've talked a little bit about Mitch Marner, but there's just as much news on Mitch as there is on Kawhi.
There's smoke. Yeah.
You know, with Kawhi, it's about, we know the teams involved that we believe we do. Well, we know the teams involved. It's the Raptors, the Clippers, or the Lakers. Hmm. And it feels more so like it's isolated between two teams now, the Lakers and the Raptors. With Marner, you know, there's a different, it's a different type of smoke because we know the Maple Leafs are primarily involved, but this threat, you know, lurking in the shadows of an offer sheet, we don't even know what team it would be. Like, is there a team that would shock you?
I'm just looking.
Just based on history, you know, based on who they are, based on their management, their ownership, taking out, you know, even if they have their four picks, if they've got the money or whatever, just based on who they are and how you feel about that organization.
So you really asked me who the most conservative general manager is out that just does everything by the book.
I guess so.
I got one.
Boston.
That's just going to say that.
I beat you too.
Boston has, according to Cap Friendly, $10.394 million.
But they'd move somebody else too.
But like, if they offer $10.3 million contract to Mitch Marner, the Leafs have to start thinking.
Wouldn't that be shocking?
Well, if your rival, your hated rival in the division,
wouldn't that be
goes ahead and does that?
Wouldn't that? Well, and would Mitch Marner sign it?
That's what's even more significant. I wouldn't put it. I would be surprised by it, but I wouldn't put it past Boston. But I honestly,
Mitch, we're going to throw you on right wing with Bergeron and Marchand because we want him to use Pasternak on the second line.
But isn't that basically a declaration of war for Marner? Like, honestly, if Marner accepts it and signs it, isn't he basically saying, I want out?
Very different from Aho accepting Montreal.
Incredibly different.
Night and day.
There's no connection between Carolina and any team in the league.
Night and day.
What it'll be is it means that it's real hardball. That it's actual warfare. Like, what we've seen from the Marner camp all season is that there has been a simmering and occasionally erupting anger and like an indignation and a need to be considered on the same level as
Austin
Matthews. And for this deal to get done, if they get a deal done, there's one of two ways. One is that you remove some of the emotion from the situation and both teams climb down a little bit and find a place in the middle where they can live. Or the other one is it's hardball, it's offer sheets, and someone's forced to do something. And
which direction is it going in for you right now, just on a time standpoint?
That's a really interesting thing, too.
I still think,
you know, because you don't have the rest of your lineup solidified. People think it's a 9-point something they've gotten cap space or 10. It's not, because your lineup's nowhere near solidified here right now. It's not.
Yep.
It's not up front, and it's not on the back end. Simply not.
So you're saying the Leafs can still
absolutely
ostensibly match
absolutely
anything and pay him anything?
No question.
Right, which is also, Marner knows that.
Of course he does.
You know, Marner's well aware that, you know,
like,
this
don't
game...
tell me Trevor Moore is locked in at third line left wing or...
Right.
You know, Alex Kerfoot is locked in. That's not the case.
You can maneuver things around. You know, this idea of trying to get a read on leverage is, again, what separates the Marner from the Kawhi. Everyone knows Kawhi's got all the leverage. He's got all the leverage.
But here's a
Who's
leverage
got
point.
The leverage with Marner?
Here's a leverage point with Marner in terms of offer sheets. And, again, until it happens, it hasn't happened. And even the Montreal one was more an appearance of an offer sheet than an actual, like,
which I actually
attack.
Liked it from two of the three parties involved.
Two of the three.
Two of the three.
You liked it from Aho?
I liked it from Aho.
And you liked
and
it from?
Agent, Montreal.
Yeah.
I really
Why do you like it from Montreal?
Because they took a swing at a player at a number that fit in their cap.
Mm-hmm.
They really wanted the player, but the number didn't blow their own internal cap out of the water. And they put that little tweak in there about the signing bonuses that they thought might be enough to get the player. So they didn't destroy their own salary cap.
Yep.
They didn't go after a player foolishly. He fits with their young group very well. He fits at center very well. He'd have been a really good player to get.
Mm-hmm. And they front-loaded it as much as they could.
And that was the twist they put in.
Yeah.
And from a player standpoint and the agent standpoint, I think the agent did a great job.
Mm-hmm. So in
he got his player more money.
In terms of leverage that Mitch Marner has, in an offer sheet situation, which again is fairly hypothetical at this point, is the Leafs probably have a number above which they go, you know, maybe we take the picks. Maybe we take the picks, except then what good are the picks going to do you if you don't trade them for a player right now? Every Leafs season is precious. Every single one. You can't throw, like, the reason that William Nylander got paid is he was willing to go to the wall. He was willing to walk right up to the edge of the canyon and say, I'm going to jump in.
Yep.
and if they go through the whole season without William Nylander, you are losing a player off your roster with no compensation in a year where you hope to compete for the Stanley Cup. Next year's the same because they got one defenseman under contract after this year. You've got to get through this year before you get to next year. And so they need Mitch Marner on this roster, or they need equivalent talent and fit.
Which isn't going to happen. You're not going to get
that's
the
equivalent
of Mitch Marner right now.
Is that the window is limited to one-year increments right now.
Yeah.
And
it
is changing. It is absolutely one-year increments because you look at a team like Winnipeg that basically did everything perfectly over the last 5 years.
Yep.
Perfectly, including taking a huge step forward and then a step back. You know, they got swept by Anaheim, and they took a huge step back and didn't make the playoffs. And yet they kept on course. They kept on par. They just lost three free agents.
Yep. Yeah, they got to shed players, good players.
Two free agents and an RFA they had to trade at a position they didn't want to trade.
The cap is basically, it's like the tide, except the tide never stops coming, right? Yeah. And you got to keep ahead of it and ahead of it and ahead of it. Like this year, if you look at Tyson Barrie, I think in points per 60 minutes played among defensemen last year was first in the NHL or second. I can't remember exactly which. It's either way, he's top two in points per minutes played in the league last year. Morgan Rielly was top five. They have two awesome players at the back end right now for 1 year.
Yeah.
1 year of having two dragsters who fit what Kyle Dubas basically said on the conference call, what he wants his team to be. Get the puck, move the puck. Get the puck, move the puck. They want this to be a skill-based team that overwhelms you.
And the only reason they can afford that second defenseman is because the other team's paying half his salary.
Half his salary. Right. But it's not just that. Like, next year, you've got to sign Barry, and then you've got to fill out the rest of your defense.
The entire core.
And you've
Travis Dermott is an RFA.
Yep.
Yeah, but here's what gets lost in all that is, like, this is where the drafting and the development and the cap comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think what they're hoping to the timeline, what's going to sync up here, mm-hmm. is Sandin's ready to play full-time next year.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Liljegren's ready to play next year, whoever it happens
That'd
to be.
Hollowell.
Maybe Hollowell. Maybe Dermott takes that next step and is a legitimate top three or four guy next year. So it's all connected.
It is.
You know, it all has to be in mm-hmm. sync. But
it's not a five-year plan. That's
no,
a hard
not.
Plan.
Well, but like, Tyson Barrie, I don't think it's a foregone conclusion he won't be here next year.
Neither do I.
No, but you
I don't
gotta,
see
but,
why it would be.
Going to be
but
expensive.
You got to figure out how much it's going to cost. Like with the Leafs, as long as this goes, even if they win a cup the next day, The noise is going to start again. They're going to go, how are we going to fit this? Like, Morgan Riley at some point is going to get paid like a real elite NHL defenseman. 2022 is contract.
3 years down the road. But that's an eternity in pro sports.
But they've got to get from here to there and have and be ready for a decision on that then.
Yeah.
And every like if you sign Tyson Berry to a five-year deal after this year, that's going to impact the Morgan Riley contract. Yeah, and it's going to be like this is so hard.
So constant.
The league is built to take teams apart.
Which is so ridiculous
it
when
is.
You think about it. Why would you cannibalize your own teams?
Well, we're watching Winnipeg be cannibalized.
Yeah, they are. And they haven't achieved anything.
Yeah.
No.
They haven't won anything. They got to a conference final 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Got beat by an expansion team.
Remember there was that who was it? Which agent said it? Anton Thun, I think, said it. That the Leafs would be the first team that were going to have to break up their core for the salary cap before they win a cup.
Right.
Well, turns out the Winnipeg Jets are actually that team.
Yeah.
Right? And
yeah.
But they're not alone in that. Also, we are entering an age where young players want to get paid more sooner. Like the David Pastrnak deals are hard to find. David Pastrnak would like come to your house and sign a deal.
Well,
he's the happiest guy in the world to be underpaid.
Isn't it surprising that the league, you know, by all accounts, they didn't put up much of a fight? Like, they've just allowed this to unravel? You know, Poole, you talk about it all the time. You've got to use the CBA to your advantage. Well, the CBA was built specifically for the guy who's been in the league for 3 years to have no leverage and no rights whatsoever. Can't go to arbitration. He's an RFA. No one throws out offer
sheets. He doesn't
have
arb rights.
No,
not
so
immediately.
Can't do anything. And yet, these guys have just decided, well, we don't care about that anymore.
Virtually
we're changing the rules.
Every time I had a conversation with Alex Anthopoulos, he used to say, why do you give up control so fast?
Right. Yeah.
This all goes back to the Dustin Penner offer sheet. It goes back to that point. That was the first RFA to get an offer sheet out of an entry-level contract. And Brian Burke at the time in Anaheim said, I don't care about the offer sheet to the RFA. I care about the timing of it and giving up the second contract. Mm-hmm. That's what I care about. That was his beef. You were all of a sudden, instead of going a three-year entry-level contract, a second contract, you were giving the home run contract, and not even waiting till the end of the third year, you were giving it at the start of the third year on July 1st.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, after 2 years, you were giving out huge eight-year home run contracts.
The NHL CBA should have a subtitle that says unintended consequences.
Well,
every time they write it, they wind up in trouble. Like, Roberto Luongo is retiring, and it's going to slam the Vancouver Canucks. For signing a deal that was legal under the terms of that collective bargaining agreement. And I don't care if the league said don't do that. It was legal. You were allowed to do it because they didn't write a CBA that would outlaw it.
Right.
And then
and
Tom
that's
Dundon,
what we're getting now.
Tom Dundon comes in as the new owner of the Canes, reads the CBA as a total outsider, reads it again, says, we got to do things differently. Trades a couple of players, mm-hmm. good players away, because he won't. And yet he's caught in the exact same thing. And he wants to do it the way it's written in the CBA. Mm-hmm. It's hard for one guy to do that.
Right. Well, but it also feels like the Maple Leafs have taken it to the extreme. Because there are examples of teams still utilizing the CBA to mm-hmm. their advantage. San Jose is a perfect example.
Yes.
They locked in Timo Meier at 4 years at $6 million. Now, the term is a little bit unique. And
because it walks them.
It walks them. And that fourth year is also like a $10 million hit. Be so that when he goes to arbitration, that's basically the starting point, which is significant. It's a poison pill, basically.
Yeah, very much so.
But still, in the grand scheme of things, for the next 4 years, you got a really good player at $6 million. That's reasonable. I would argue that's a team-friendly deal.
But see, I don't mind a tweak like that in that fourth year. I don't mind the QO has to
be. That's fine.
I don't mind that at all. That's
right.
Creative to me.
Yes.
That's creative management.
But it's a team-friendly deal in this scope.
Yes.
And I can't tell you where it's going in years five and beyond for Timo Meier and the Sharks.
But the signing bonus is...
Everything works out.
93% signing bonus on a, you know...
But, I would argue the Oilers, you know, they got burned because it felt like they capitulated to Draisaitl, but in retrospect, they didn't at all. Like, not to the extent that the Leafs have.
Well, like, what that was is that was one of the first deals like that... Where you say, this is how much a player like this at this age costs now.
But and he got 8 years for it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's changed that much from, like, the idea that Austin Matthews got a five-year deal at 11.6 is insane.
Yes.
Based on where we were 2 years ago in this league.
Yes, it is.
Insane.
But one thing that the
Leafs... But he got it.
But one thing the Leafs ran up against is not just this time in the league and not just players in general wanting to exercise their rights a little more aggressively. He ran up against three players whose camps were very hard-headed and, in fact, close to militant. Again, William Nylander was willing to trash a season to get that contract, and he got it. And Austin Matthews, he negotiated from a position of extraordinary strength.
Yes, he did.
And now Mitch Marner is in a position where, again, he still has a fair amount of leverage here.
I agree.
Because if he follows the Nylander playbook, yeah, Nylander said, yeah, I shouldn't have done that. It screwed up my whole season. He's getting paid.
Well, but that's where, again, the Maple Leafs, who I think have conceded more power to the players than any other team, just because of the position they've mm-hmm. been in, they have the ability to maybe change the course of history here again by saying, we're going to trade you. Like, you can try to act as if you have all the leverage, but in the end, you don't. Because if you really want to play here, and we know you really want to play here, mm-hmm. the only guy in this room who can make sure you don't ever play here again is us.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't want it to get to that point. I don't see it getting to that point. Kyle Dubas has been very clear. He doesn't want
it. Not the intent of the CBA to do that.
No, of course not. But, you know, if the rules are changing, if we're in the Wild West, this is Deadwood, basically. You got to, you might have to create your own rules. Or at some point, you might have to send out a vibe like, sorry, guys. Like, I know I've had a rubber arm the past two or three times, but it's got to stop.
Well, they create their own rules with things like a 93%. 92% signing bonus or whatever.
Again, the creative interpretation of the CBA, this league has never written a CBA that didn't wind up in a place that they didn't expect. And I don't know if that's just they haven't spent enough time with it. I don't know if the lawyers aren't good enough.
But
I don't know what it is.
The NBA one, Bruce, there are 947 different exemptions in the NBA one. So whatever was originally written there in that CBA, there's exemptions, mid-level exemptions, mm-hmm. you know, right back to the Larry Bird exemption.
But it hasn't. The thing that has happened in the NBA that was an unintended consequence is the idea of the Supermax hasn't been as powerful incentive for players to re-sign in markets as they right. thought, right? Like Kawhi Leonard walked away from one. Kemba Walker didn't get one in Charlotte. Just the money isn't it. Like,
yeah, well, because it's so much money. But it's so much money. Guys are like, okay, would I like 240? Yes, but I'm still getting 190.
And there's ways to make up that money in later contracts and all this stuff. But that's the only real unintended consequence, because the way the NBA CBA is supposed to work is they want players to enough stars spread across the league that you reward as many owners and as many markets as possible. And the Kevin Durant thing ruined that for 3 years because ESPN paid them $1.5 billion a year. And now the Kevin Durant era is over.
Flood of that money.
And if Kawhi doesn't go to the Lakers, then what you have is something close to what the league was trying to build.
But you're also talking from a hockey perspective, this maybe unintended consequence on a managerial level.
Mm-hmm.
The owners are still getting their 50%.
Yep.
So, you know, might they have some concerns? Sure. Are some GMs going to be disappointed with the way some things are playing out? Absolutely. But I think the owners are sitting there saying, I still get my 50%. So I don't care if I pay it to one guy, if I pay it to 23 guys, it doesn't matter to me.
But the question I always have with the NHL is it good for the game in a way that you are rewarding your fans? And
no, this isn't healthy for the fans.
And that's
it's not
what
healthy
saying.
For the players.
From a loyalty
either.
Standpoint.
We were going to get into this during the trade deadline coverage, you know, about how this new landscape in the NHL clearly benefits the RFAs. The RFAs are the winners. So who are the losers?
Mm-hmm.
The easy answer are, well, the UFAs, the older guys who aren't getting as much money. But I would argue on the short term, the losers are these the RFAs, the young superstars, their reputations within their own markets.
Mm-hmm.
Because you never thought of money with kids coming into the game. You never thought of it. It didn't matter. There wasn't a significant negotiation until they were 7, 8, 9 years into the league.
Well, and I'll if take really... you back when this started, and there was, and his name was Eric Lindros.
Okay, you're right. That's an extreme example.
One.
Extreme example.
But that's a great point. Because think about Eric Lindros' career in the context of the history of the NHL, not on the ice, because there have been dominant players on the ice. Every 10 years, we spit out a guy who is the generational guy, right? Going back to the 50s, if you want to keep going.
Yeah.
Like, just from Bobby Orr, Wayne Gretzky, Mario Lemieux, and Eric Lindros was the missing link between Lemieux and Sidney Crosby. And what did Eric Lindros do differently than anybody else? He tried to take control of his career from the time he was in junior.
Before he had a career.
And in the NHL. Right? And what did the hockey experience do to Eric Lindros? It cut him down to a size that it could manage on the ice and off the ice in the way that management went to war with him and in the way that, I mean, the way that the game preyed on him and the way that the rules were allowed to prey on him at the time.
Mm-hmm.
If Eric Lindros comes out today, He's Austin Matthews.
He changed the CBA.
He's Austin Matthews, and he's and it, like he's getting $12 million a year for 5 years out of his first entry-level contract.
Yeah.
And he's deciding where he wants to play.
Well, that I'm not convinced of, because he didn't pick Philadelphia. Philadelphia picked him equally.
He was going to New York or Philadelphia.
Right, it was one of those two teams.
So he was picking.
Right. But
he really was.
He would have gone to the Leafs, too. The Leafs weren't willing to pay the price. I think that's my understanding. Is I think he would have been okay if the Maple Leafs came calling, but they weren't willing to pay the price.
Imagine if Eric Lindros came, and like one thing that is happening with NHL players is they're seeing how NBA players prosecute their careers, right? How they take control of their situations a little more.
Mm-hmm.
If Eric Lindros had seen that,
yeah,
I'm
but you're also, it's apples and oranges, because in the NBA you can, you know, it's a soft cap. Like now it's what complicates everything is this hard cap.
But the term is a big, big factor, and that's the Austin Matthews.
Yeah. Right. That's the difference.
That's
the 5 year
difference.
Right. But I guess what I'm saying is from a reputational standpoint, and this is all a part of business, like using Marner as an example, but you could apply this to Tkachuk, you could apply it to Line A Point, whomever. Everyone keeps saying, well, you got to do what's best for your business. Well, your image is a big part of your business. So, yes, in terms of the dollars and cents in term or whatever, going to war in a negotiation, maybe signing that offer sheet is in that best interest, but it may not be in terms of your public relations. And Marner, I think it's an even more extreme because he's a local kid playing for the biggest team in the league with the most coverage and the most emotional fan base going.
And he's had enormous individual success.
Huge success. He's beloved. Like nobody, like that's the amazing thing about where we're at. We're into the dollars and cents here, but on the ice, he has received nothing but rave reviews.
He is the most beloved Maple Leaf.
I think he might be.
On a team full of stars.
Yeah, I think he might be. And it's either him or Matthews. Riley's beloved. I mean, there's a couple of guys, but he is loved on the ice.
Yeah.
But if he signs an offer sheet with Montreal tomorrow, I'm sorry, your reputation's going to change.
But the CBA is set up in these situations now if the player is militant enough to create villains.
Of course.
And so it's
but do you want that? Is that good for your – you don't want to be a villain in your own market.
That's a good question.
Great to be a villain.
You better be leaving.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
You better be leaving.
Like, but I think he can spin an offer sheet with Columbus or with Colorado or Jersey and say, hey, listen, I just didn't see it going my way. I wanted to do what Aho did and end it, and let's move on. I love being a Leaf. You cannot convince me that that's the same thing if it's with Boston or Montreal.
Except that...
You can't.
You know what? What it creates is a great storyline in the NHL, man.
Oh, incredible content.
And then you find out just how militant a player is.
Yeah. Oh, I would give him credit for it. I'd give him all the credit in the world.
But think about this. Again, in the NBA, guys have gone... Like, Kevin Durant went from the Oklahoma City Thunder to the team that beat them in the conference final.
Right.
Right? Like.
Yeah, but he took a beating for it. And I'm not sure he's ever recovered. Well, and I think he might have left because of that beating.
I'm not. I think the real thing with Durant is he still has to figure out what fulfills him in life. And I'm not sure anything can within the basketball realm. Like
he's
that's
got a full year
so that becomes
out.
More complicated. But he still went from one team to another.
Yeah, he did.
Right.
Now he's on his third. Leo Routens will be in studio. We'll get Leo's take on all this. He's got takes.
He's got takes.
Bruce Arthur's in here. Dave Pullen. I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app and up on TSN 2. Brian Hayes, Bruce Arthur from the Star. Dave Pullen. Leo Routens in the house.
We just keep rolling all stars in here.
Right? This is
where. Traffic on a Friday. You don't know which way traffic is going to be on a Friday. It's going to be light. It's going to be heavy. Traffic's heavy in here,
man,
right?
There's
now
a lot of people up here. You're up here waiting for Kawhi, I'm assuming.
It's been a long day. Actually, it's been a long week, 2 weeks. I don't even know what it's been.
I don't consider the Sunday night the start of it. I consider the Monday because you didn't even take meetings on the Sunday night. Like, nothing was happening. So today is the 5th of Kawhi. And
but you guys
going to be the 6th
so
of Kawhi. Yesterday
so
was the 4th of Kawhi.
Sunday
the
night.
Yeah.
That well, you had everything going on Sunday.
It's such
night.
A boss move just to watch all the explosions happen and then decide what you want to do. It's awesome.
Yeah. Well, has there anything surprised you throughout the process? Leo, you know, is there anything popped up where you said, well, that's an interesting move I didn't see coming?
You know what? I can't say anything surprised me, but I guess I'm still surprised that because of 24-hour sports, that people just speculate about what they don't know. Just consistently coming up with this and that, and you don't know. Like, I'll be honest with you. Anybody ask me, I'll say, I have no idea. I've been around this team since day one. I mean, all the way back, right? I have no idea. So what am I going to do? Get up here and give you all kinds of... I don't know, right? I don't know. Anything I could tell you what I think or what maybe I would do if I was him. Other than that, I don't know.
Right.
Yeah. And nobody else does.
No. But the world we live in today, someone does know usually because someone has told someone.
Yeah.
But that's someone the cool thing about this guy.
That's the very cool
thing. Yeah, and this is the way it should be, right? If we're negotiating, the whole world shouldn't be privy to our conversations. And this is the way it should be. And so it's really cool that he can have this inner circle. And you know, sometimes you hear guys with their circles, right? And you go, whatever, you know. You just got guys. But this is an inner circle that really protects him and takes care of him and he trusts.
Mm-hmm. And how many are in that?
Well, I think you know the exact number.
Okay, so
Bruce?
Uncle Dennis Robertson, who is essentially his surrogate father, is the most significant advisor he's got. Jeremy Castleberry, who is such a good friend that he's in an assistant coach on two teams.
Yep.
Now, like I used to joke that if you're looking at this season, if you're looking at the power ranking of most important people with the Raptors, it's Masai Ujiri or Kawhi Leonard. And then it's Jeremy Castleberry, right?
Like that's they hired after they acquired.
Yes, like that's it's a package deal.
Brilliant move.
Rich Kleiman is his business manager. That's how Chris Carter is getting information because they share the same business manager. There are a couple other people. There's his girlfriend with whom he has two children. There's some childhood friends. But in terms of people who are around every day, like it's Uncle Dennis and Castleberry. And that's about it for the people who I think are in the room when he's making a decision, as far as anyone can tell.
So where's Castleberry right now?
Probably with Kawhi,
Where's Kawhi right now? Like, honestly.
Which is interesting for a coach.
Think about this week. We don't know when. Nobody knows exactly when the Lakers meeting was, when the Clippers meeting was, or where the Raptors meeting was.
Well, I think that might be.
We know everything.
Yeah. What's most surprising about this for me is that Magic Johnson has not said anything the past 3 or 4 days.
The leaks happened Monday, Tuesday, though.
They came out, and Magic was happy to go on the record saying that, you know, Kawhi's reaching out, and if he wants to talk, I'm happy to talk. Yeah. But where's Magic been? Like, if you call Magic, he's going to talk.
That's because Magic realizes now that every time you say something,
yeah,
that guy's going further and further away from you.
Right.
So exactly.
He finally learned something in terms of Matt, because Magic loves, like, he hasn't been tweeting about Kawhi Leonard, nothing.
And think about it. If you're Kawhi who values that trust, the privacy, and you've met with three teams, and there is anything coming out, who are the teams that are leaking it? Is that where you want to be? Is that who you trust? And think about the Raptors. There's nothing. I mean, zero coming out of them. There's nothing coming out of Kawhi. So everything you're hearing is either Lakers or Clippers. That's it.
Well, and I would argue that I don't think we've really heard anything from the Clippers. And what the Lakers revealed in not only Magic talking, but all the details of who Kawhi had talked to, and then details of the questions he had asked, what that tells me is they had no idea who they were dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
They had no
idea. They didn't do their homework.
Exactly. And what were the questions about? How dysfunctional is this organization really?
And you know as well as I do that the Clippers have done their homework because
yes.
Somebody from the Clippers was at every game
right.
All season.
And,
somebody.
And they hired Lee Jenkins from Sports Illustrated, who was the number one feature writer in the NBA in terms of delving into guys. And I'm sure he knows as much about Kawhi as anybody alive.
Well, don't you think, I mean, it's pretty clear they have the most to lose and most to gain, the Clippers.
Clips,
I mean,
yeah.
The Raptors have their title. Like, obviously, it would mean the world to them if Kawhi Leonard resigns here. And the significance of who he is and the representation of what, you know, it's all about and where basketball is going to go in this city, in this country, if it's linked to Kawhi Leonard as a Raptor. But they got their title. The Clippers, they haven't even come close to a title. And they fully invested this year in this recruitment of Kawhi Leonard, just like the Raptors did. But the Raptors' payoff was he was playing for them.
Right, but you think of the respect, though. The respect of a Kawhi Leonard that three teams really you get straddled big time right here. I mean you're out after this. You're all the free agents just coming off the list. Everybody
yeah.
coming off the list while he's making his decision. So you know, there's a big commitment to going after him, and I think that's something else he wants to see.
Who do you think has the best team right now? taking Kawhi out of it. You look at the rosters currently constructed. If you can do that, the Lakers have like four guys.
They don't even have enough to field a team.
Yeah. No, but is it the Raptors, the Lakers, the Clippers?
I like the Raptors, obviously, because they are champions. And if you look at that team, you know, we saw Pascal Siakam last year. What's he going to be this coming year? What's Fred if he's got a healthy season from start to finish? You know, basically this season was without OG Anunoby. I mean, he was a non-factor all season long. So the Raptors, outside of Kawhi, I think could be even better than they were last season, mm-hmm. you know, provided they're healthy. And then, you know, Masai Ujiri, with or without Kawhi, he's not going to sit there and say, hey, we won a championship. He's going to be looking to tweak this team and do whatever he can to make it better. So, you know, I think on paper, I'd say the Raptors. But then when you look at the Lakers, I mean, LeBron, you know, arguably Anthony the best Davis. Player in the world, along with Kawhi Leonard. You know, KD's not in the mix for next year. Anthony Davis, now, I got to put a caveat on Anthony Davis, because is he talented? Yeah. Is he, you know, a tremendous talent? But one, he's a power forward. And power forwards are not franchise guys, historically.
Hard to do.
And the other part of that is, if you're worth $200 million, you can't get your team in the eighth spot in the playoffs. And there's and people argue about this. There's been enough talent around him. I don't care what anybody says. I'll take a bunch of those guys on my team. I'll take a Drew Holiday.
Right.
When you look at that team. So, he's talented. But he hasn't shown that he can lead. He hasn't shown that he can win. He hasn't shown that he can take charge. And he hasn't shown that he can stay on the floor for enough games every season he's going to be playing for you.
I will say this, though. If Kawhi goes there, that's as good of a three-man collection as has ever been assembled in the modern NBA.
I agree.
Because you will never, like, I agree that there are people who think that Anthony Davis, that there's some underlying issues with his on-off splits, and is he tough enough? Is he a competitive enough guy for all that talent? But if he's your third best player, and that's what he would be.
So he's Chris Bosh, is what you
think. He's Chris Bosh.
He would play that role.
If Chris Bosh could average 28 and 14 mm-hmm. and block four shots a game. And like,
but Chris showed up and played every night.
Oh, sure. But
and
like,
he settled into his role.
But Davis is better than him.
He's a better player. And LeBron slides over to more of that point guard where he's putting himself back and he's distributing, mm-hmm. making those both of them better, giving them easier shots and so forth.
But it's an incredibly thin roster outside of that, because you're signing minimum guys if you sign Kawhi. If you don't, then you've got some cap space, but a lot of the guys on the market are gone.
And if I'm Kawhi, I'm looking at, okay, my injury, my body was handled tremendously by the Toronto Raptors. What's it going to be like if, how many games is LeBron going to play? I don't know. How many games is Davis going to play? I don't know. Now we got a bunch of one-year guys. Is that going to be the best situation for me physically mm-hmm. going into next season? Because I think what he's gone through and what he's battled through is not done yet. I think he's got to continue to take care of himself.
Although one thing LeBron used to say in Cleveland is, I don't care what seed we are. I don't care who we're playing. You
right.
put me in a playoff series, we can take anybody.
Yeah.
And I bet that would be the approach for the Lakers is,
it would have to be. Honestly, it would have to be.
Yeah, it would have to be.
Take us into the meetings with Masai and Kawhi and say, you know, speculation is it could be longer than a 1 or 2 year deal. And how much it gets down to specific growth and players and who Kawhi can see coming here to Toronto to play with, and sort of almost putting the assistant general manager hat on him, if you will.
Yeah, no, I think if you listen to Kawhi, he's a smart guy, and he doesn't mince words. He doesn't, you know, overtalk on any situation. But he asks. You remember Nick Nurse talking about him the mm-hmm. first time they met? Mm-hmm. They went through everything. It was a great basketball conversation. So you know he's talking to Masai about what his plan is. And the great thing about it is, I'm sure Masai gave him his plan when he got here.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened this past year? That plan was executed, probably in every possible way.
Right.
And
right?
more.
And more.
You can put belief in that plan.
There you go. So now whatever he's going to tell you, and you know Masai is going to put a lot of thought into this meeting, everything they do. He's also got, now he knows that guy, Nick Nurse, that he just met and had some basketball conversation with. And now he's going, you know what, that dude's pretty good.
That's a good coach.
Right. And then he's got this other guy, Alex McKechnie, that basically revitalized his whole career, put him in a situation to become the playoff MVP. And he's here. right? And that, and they've already, you know, they're already working physically, regardless of, you know, what the decision is made. They've already working from the day the season ended. I mean, that's the way Alex is. So, you know, I think that conversation was a highly intelligent, you know, in-depth conversation with trust being a factor. There's trust already.
And well, very pointed, too, about specific
players. Sure, absolutely. And that's the kind of guy Kawhi is.
Because I played with guys that didn't know players in the league, and I played with guys that really – this would surprise you, but there are guys that play and don't really know players in the league. Like, don't know the depth of the players in the league. They know the main guys, but they don't know the depth of them.
Right.
But Kawhi is a guy that would know.
Oh, yeah, because when you even listen to his interviews during the season, when asked about individuals – his answers are great. Yeah. I mean, this is a smart guy with a high basketball IQ.
I would guarantee you, by the way, that the plan for the Raptors in the future, the first time that Kawhi Leonard heard it was not at that meeting when they met this week. Masai's had him a year, right? And so he's Leo, the key point that you made there is trust.
Mm-hmm.
Kawhi has made clear that he wants to be able to trust the organization that he's working for. The Raptors have that in spades. They have everything laid out for him. And now it's just a matter of trusting whether they can spin it forward. So that's trusting in Masai Ujiri, his plan, his ability to execute that plan.
And Masai's had the opportunity to deal with all of Kawhi's inner circle on a regular basis because he's still a Raptor. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he doesn't – yeah, he's got that final meeting. But he didn't need that final meeting to establish, to maintain the trust, to continue the conversation, to keep everybody in a loop on what's happening.
It wasn't saying, hi, how are you?
There you go.
But that's always been a part of the discussion, though, is how much do you push that ability? Like the fact that he is employed by you and he's in your orbit every day, how often do you go up to him and push those buttons?
You make it natural. Like, and that's one thing that Masai said. He said, we're going to be ourselves. But I think that as the season's gone on, there have been conversations in which Masai has said, this is what I'd like to do. This is what I'd like to do. This is how I see this going forward. Because that's a conversation that I think Kawhi Leonard has wanted to have. Masai in his season-ending press conference said, he challenges me the way I challenge him. And what that was is Kawhi saying, how do you make this better?
And think about Nick Nurse. He made a point the other day. He said, you know, I haven't talked to Kawhi about, you know, any of this stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, that's good because you're the coach. I want to coach you. And how did Nick coach all year? Well, okay, you can't play. Ah, we'll move on. You're out. Okay, we'll do this. Nothing. He just coaches. So he doesn't cross over. He's not shifting into a GM role. He has Kawhi's trust, player coach. Mm-hmm. It's not his job to make these personnel decisions.
Well, and what's interesting about that, Leo Routens, Bruce Arthur, Dave Pullen in studio, we believe, you know, we can't definitively say anything about these meetings, but we believe LeBron James was involved. So if LeBron is involved, why can't Kyle Lowry be involved? Why can't Serge Ibaka be involved? Kyle's like, those are his guys.
Well, except Kyle's position has always been, and he was like
publicly,
this. It was like
that.
This with DeMar DeRozan. I don't recruit, my play recruits.
Right.
Kyle's argument is game six NBA finals.
Sure. Right. And LeBron's got some pretty good arguments, too.
Yeah, but think about, okay, the league. Okay, you know, Jimmy Butler and Kawhi are talking. They're going to play. Of course they're talking. Guess what? During the course of the year, you're talking, I'm talking, we're talking, we're all talking. They're players. They're all friends. Half these guys play AAU ball against each other. They've known each other for years. Yes, they all talk. They talk, hey, you want to come play with me sometime? Hey, yeah, I'll think about it. They have these conversations all the time. And so has Ibaka talked to Kawhi about coming back? Has Fred? Has Kyle? We don't know. Because none of them are telling us anyway. Kawhi's certainly not going to tell us. And I'm sure the conversations could be as casual as you and I going and having a beer. Say, hey, you coming back? Mm-hmm.
Serge Ibaka
let's keep
that.
This thing going,
the
man.
Cooking
yeah.
show.
Come over and have some. I'm not going to tell you what we're going to eat.
But
appetizing
all these guys have shown Kawhi what they can do. And at times in the playoffs where they couldn't do.
Yeah.
Right? There's times when every single player outside Kawhi struggled at one point or another. And then he saw what they also delivered in the biggest moments. Remember, Kawhi's worst game of the finals was probably game six. Mm-hmm. Like, and they won that game because other guys stepped
Kyle
up. Multiple.
Up.
Yep. Pascal Siakam had a terrific game.
Up.
So that's the argument there. I still think the argument is, do you believe Masai Ujiri can give you better shots at not just a championship window this year, but if you're looking at a five-year deal over the next 5 years? So that means that Masai has said, this is the plan. And I have to believe that the best case scenario, the dream, and I'm not sure how you get from here to there, in 2021, they go get Giannis Antetokounmpo. It's everybody's dream, and it's the Raptors' dream, too. And you build around, if Kawhi Leonard's under contract, Kawhi, Giannis, Pascal Siakam, and Fred VanVleet. And that's how you start. And that team competes for titles every year that everybody's healthy.
Yep.
And that's what you want to get to.
Yep.
And do you believe that he can do that? That is the real question that Kawhi's got to answer.
Yeah. Now, you said you weren't in these meetings, correct?
No, I was not
with
in
Kawhi?
These meetings.
But that's fine.
I have high confidence.
That works.
He also is
a good private investigator that puts in plants in every room.
Right. That's right. The connected man, Bruce.
I'm just saying. But it's also, you don't have to talk to people to figure that one out. That one's an obvious one.
Right? I mean, every team, because the Lakers are going to be saying the same thing. Yes, we're maxed out right now, but at some point.
The Knicks are trying to talk themselves into it.
Yeah, but the Lakers have a recent history that says, man, it's like New York. Are you shocked that nobody went there?
Yeah.
No.
I said it a while ago. Nobody's going there.
But the Clippers are in the same spot.
I think the Clippers
are a better run organization.
Right, but they didn't get anybody. No. Like, if Kawhi leaves, this is as big of a hit on them as it is the Knicks.
Yeah.
Like, I know the Knicks are easier to goof on, but the Clippers are all in. They got two max slots. They're all about trying to get somebody.
They will have missed. Think about who they will have missed on, right? Like, Kawhi Leonard is the hardest guy, as we've seen. We're still sitting here, and we've been sitting here all week. Yep. This is the hardest guy in the league to recruit, and his choices outside of the Clippers are the team that just won the championship and did everything right, or the team cross town that has LeBron James and Anthony Davis and probably doesn't deserve to get him, but LeBron James. Like, that's who they're going to lose out to if they lose out.
That's fine, but they lost out on Jimmy Butler. They lost out on Kyrie. They lost out on Kevin Durant. They've lost out on everybody.
And, you know, I don't think they lost out on Jimmy Butler because they didn't want him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but here's the funny thing, too, that, you know, the Clippers do have a solid organization. But if you are going to be in L.A., where would you want to be?
Number one, Lakers, right?
Yeah. And obviously,
see, I'm not even sure.
Not right now, obviously, because of the issues. But if you were going to be in LA, that still would be that's where I'd want to be.
Except if you cleaned out the front office and you had a stable organization.
Right. But that's exactly. But that's
simple
that's
as a Laker or a Clipper.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then let's go back to the one point too that nobody can compete with. Do you just want to go home?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If you're Kawhi, you're California, if you just simply want to go home, well, I get that too.
I do after I retire, but I don't want to play in that town and then retire there.
Yeah.
And that's actually, that's
peace,
a real question.
He'd be much more peaceful.
Well, we were talking about that
retirement.
Earlier. You know,
it's a real question.
If he plays till, 33, well, guess what? You got the rest of your life to go home.
Absolutely.
Right?
And
so you do
won't
have that.
You played there, so you won't have the fame.
Right. And what do you take the most satisfaction out of? Your workplace.
Yeah.
Workplace here was pretty good.
Great seeing you, Leo. Thanks, buddy.
I appreciate you guys letting me come
in. Good luck tonight.
Good luck, man. Yeah, hopefully you get out of here at some point. As Leo Routens, our Raptors analyst on Kawhi Watch up here with SportsCenter. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Shockingly, I'm going over in the Jays game tonight. I'm on the Sox Road Plus in Detroit. I'm on the under in the Dodgers-Padres game tonight. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio. And get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, get way into the game. So I'm off next week, and Kawhi is not signed yet. And Mitch Marner is not signed yet. Aaron Sanchez kind of hangs in the balance.
Yep.
Marcus Stroman, his future hangs in the balance.
Good go.
So it's great.
Yeah.
I'll be off next week, and just monster news items will happen in Toronto.
You should just call in.
I will, actually. I guess I could.
Long time listener.
Do that.
First time caller.
For the big time RFAs traded.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It'll be a monster.
Yeah, it'll be
monster fun. Deals.
Could be.
Well, enjoy it, boys. I don't know what you guys are up to, but
as soon as Kawhi Watch is over,
you're out.
No one's seeing me for the rest of the summer.
You're going to pull a Kawhi. You're gone.
I'm absolutely gone.
Bully, you're kicking around the city, right?
7:43 tomorrow morning.
Oh, you're playing golf. Okay. Gord Miller will be in this seat next Monday.
Yes, he will.
Bully,
I'll be joining him a couple times next week, Tuesday and Thursday, I believe.
Beautiful. Well, good seeing you, boys. Bruce, thanks for doing this, man.
My pleasure.
Good luck, Bruce.
A fun, not fun day.
Enjoy yourself. Bully, great seeing you, buddy.
Take care, Brian.
I'm out of here. I'm back in a couple of weeks. I guess we'll chat then.